This episode of The Deep Dive is brought to you by Wadadley Solar LLC, making sure your solar investment actually pays you back.
Solar is not a tax strategy. It's an energy strategy. Wow. That is the opening line from our source today. And I have to be honest, my first reaction was to push back a little.
I can see why.
I mean, look at the industry. Just look at the last decade of growth. You cannot tell me that tax equity, the ITC, depreciation, you can't tell me those weren't the primary drivers for like 90% of the steel in the ground.
It's a bold claim, for sure. If you're sitting in a boardroom, you're looking at an IRR model, then solar is absolutely a tax strategy. It's a financial vehicle.
Right.
But that's exactly the friction our source, Alexis Lewis, is trying to, you know, expose.
So we are digging into a piece called The Foundation of Performance, Solar as Critical Infrastructure. And this isn't some, you know, white paper from a DC think tank. These are field notes.
Field notes.
So Lewis is writing from the perspective of someone managing commercial solar portfolios right in New York City.
Which is its own special kind of chaos.
Right. It's not a gigawatt scale tracker in the desert. We're talking tight spaces, old roofs, logistical nightmares. But the core argument Lewis makes is that while the whole industry is obsessed with the deal,
the closing, the tax equity, the flip.
Exactly. The actual long-term viability of the asset is being decided by the unglamorous work happening on the roof years after the champagne has been popped.
It's the tension between the deal and the asset. And frankly, for a lot of our listeners who work in this space, you know, the deal usually sucks all the oxygen out of the room.
Right.
Lewis is trying to pivot that whole conversation from the transaction to the operation.
So let's look at how Lewis visualizes this. It's called the pyramid of performance, a hierarchy of the industry.
Okay.
And at the very top, you have policy and incentives.
Heavy hitters. This is the Inflation Reduction Act, state-level mandates, the REC markets. This is the layer that basically creates the artificial environment where solar is profitable in the first place.
Then just below that, the upper middle, developers and investors, the structures.
Yeah. The people who turn that policy into a spreadsheet. They're modeling the cash flows. They're securing the site control, finding the offtake.
Then the lower middle, EPCs, that's engineering, procurement, construction. The builders.
Who are essentially just executing the spreadsheet. They're under immense pressure to deliver on time and on budget to meet the return hurdles set by the layer just above them.
And then at the very bottom is the base. Operations, inspections, maintenance, and repair. Lewis says this is where solar either holds up or it doesn't. But this is where I struggle with the metaphor, just a little bit. In a pyramid, the base is supposed to be the biggest, most solid part. In the solar industry, isn't the base usually the most starved for resources?
That is the great irony.
Yeah.
And it's what Lewis is getting at. The base carries everything above it. If that base fails, the policy at the top, it just becomes meaningless. But you're right, in terms of prestige, capital, focus, the pyramid is inverted. Yeah. All the money, all the glamour is at the top. The base is an afterthought. It's, oh, we'll just sign an O&M contract for, you know, $10 a kilowatt a year and forget about it.
Until the inverter blows up.
Until the inverter blows up, or the roof starts leaking, or the monitoring system just goes dark. And this is where Lewis drops a line that I think perfectly captures the operational nightmare. When systems don't produce, the failure always travels upward.
Okay, unpack that. Because usually we think of, well, you know, stuff rolling downhill.
In a corporate hierarchy, sure. But in an asset hierarchy, a physical failure at the bottom becomes a financial failure at the top.
How so?
Okay, so a connector corrodes on a roof in Queens. It's a $10 part. That string goes down. Production drops. The revenue targets in the investor's model aren't met.
The spreadsheet starts to look wrong.
Exactly. Then the tax equity partner starts asking very pointed questions about recapture risk. Then the policymakers look at the data and they see the grid isn't getting the reliability they paid for.
So the physical reality of that one tiny component dictates the reality of the entire financial instrument.
Always. But the industry acts like the financial instrument dictates reality. We just assume that because the spreadsheet says the system will produce 1,200 megawatt hours a year, it will produce that. We conflate the model with the machine.
Lewis calls this the pencil out fallacy. The idea that because a deal penciled out, I mean, the numbers worked to get the loan approved, the project is inherently successful.
It's such a dangerous mindset. Penciling out just means you convinced a credit committee to give you money. It doesn't mean the engineering is sound. It doesn't mean the equipment can handle a northeast winter.
In fact, it might mean the opposite.
Often it does. To make that deal pencil out, you probably had to value engineer the system to within an inch of its life.
You swapped the Tier 1 inverters for a Tier 2 brand. You went with a cheaper racking system.
Exactly. You squeezed the CapEx to boost the IRR. So the success at the deal layer, the top of the pyramid, is actually creating a liability at the base layer. You basically baked in failure before the first module is even installed.
And that leads to this timing mismatch that Lewis highlights. I think this is critical for understanding the kind of pump and dump nature of some development cycles.
It's the core misalignment of incentives. The developer, and often the tax equity partner, they capture a huge portion of their value right up front. The developer gets their fee at CO commercial operation date. They exit or they flip the asset.
Right.
And the tax benefits are claimed almost immediately.
So the win for them happens in year one.
Correct. But the energy strategy, the actual generation of kilowatt hours, that has to happen over year one through year 20. And the people who made all the money on the deal are long gone by the time thermal cycling starts cracking solder joints in, say, year five.
It really feels like we've created a system that incentivizes the commissioning of infrastructure, not the operation of infrastructure.
That is the multi-billion dollar question Lewis is posing. If you treat solar as a tax strategy, you only care that it gets built. If you treat it as an energy strategy, you care that it works. And the market is flooded with assets that were built for the tax credit, not for the 20-year energy yield.
Which brings us back to the whole field notes aspect of the source. Lewis talks about the reality of O&M. And it's not just wiping down panels, it's dealing with what the source calls real roofs, real equipment, real conditions.
This is where the spreadsheet meets the atmosphere. In the model, the sun always shines, the equipment degrades linearly at, what, 0.5% per year, and nothing ever breaks.
Which is not reality.
Not even close.
Yeah.
In reality, you have ownership changes where the new owner doesn't even have the original as-built drawings.
Yeah.
You have warranty providers, manufacturers, who have gone bankrupt, so that 25-year warranty is effectively a piece of paper.
And the physical environment itself. Lewis mentions New York specifically.
It's brutal. You have huge temperature swings, pollution, soot, major access issues. You can't just drive a truck up to a commercial roof in Manhattan.
No.
So if a transformer blows, how are you getting a replacement up 40 stories? The logistics of that base layer are incredibly complex. But again, during the deal phase, O&M is just a line item. It's a standardized cost assumption.
Okay, let's pivot to the career aspect here, because I found this part of the story really compelling. Lewis recounts this conversation with a senior marketing executive.
We interrupt this podcast with a quick reminder. Solar systems that aren't inspected don't perform as designed. Annual inspections protect output, safety, and payback. Wadadley Solar LLC, serving the U.S., Antigua, Guyana.
Right.
And it's a moment of vulnerability. Lewis basically admits, I want to get out of the weeds. I want to be a developer. I want to be the architect, not the janitor.
Which is the standard career ladder. Right. You cut your teeth in ops, then you move up to development or finance where the bonuses are bigger and your hands are cleaner.
Exactly. But the executive stops Lewis and says something surprising. He says, the market is contracting. You're actually in the best spot for the next few years.
That is a very contrarian take, but it's incredibly sharp.
Why, though? Why is the janitor spot the best place to be in a contracting market?
Because when capital is cheap, you know, when interest rates are near zero, the market rewards growth. It rewards new megawatts. Everybody wants to build, build, build.
Right.
But when rates are high, as they have been, and interconnection queues are jammed and equipment costs are volatile, new deals get a lot harder to pencil.
So the pipeline just dries up?
The pipeline slows way down.
Yeah.
And suddenly asset owners look at their portfolio and say, wait a minute, we can't just grow our way out of problems anymore. We need the assets we already own to actually perform.
The focus shifts from growth to yield.
Precisely.
Yeah.
If you can't build a new plant, you better make damn sure the old one is hitting its production targets. You need to stop the bleeding. And that makes the O&M professional, the person who can actually diagnose an underperforming string or navigate a warranty claim, suddenly the most valuable person in the room.
It's the difference between being a hunter and a farmer. In a boom, you hunt. In a contraction, you farm.
And Lewis is realizing that O&M isn't just maintenance. It's asset management. It's risk mitigation. In a down market, the person who preserves value is king.
You know, there's also a point here about technical debt. We talk about this in software all the time. You ship code fast and you promise to fix it later. Lewis seems to be implying the solar industry has accumulated a massive amount of, well, physical technical debt.
That's a perfect analogy. The tax strategy era encouraged speed and volume. We installed gigawatts of capacity. Now, as those systems age out of their honeymoon phase, usually past year 5 or 7, we're seeing the bill come due.
What does that look like?
Inverter failures, connector burnouts, PID, potential induced degradation, all the stuff that happens over time.
And who has to pay that debt?
The asset owner. And if the asset owner is an investment fund that didn't budget for major corrective maintenance because they believe the aggressive pro forma,
right.
Well, now their returns are underwater.
Which brings us all the way back to the credibility issue. Lewis argues that the base of the pyramid determines the validity of the top.
This is the critical infrastructure argument. If solar wants to be taken seriously, not as some alternative energy, but as the actual backbone of the grid, it has to be reliable. It has to be boringly reliable.
Boring is good in infrastructure.
Boring is essential. If we have a narrative emerging that solar is a losing asset, that after 10 years it just becomes a liability of broken glass and twisted metal, then the policy support evaporates. Why would the government subsidize a technology that doesn't last?
So the technician on the roof fixing an inverter isn't just saving a few kilowatt hours.
No.
They are saving the reputation of the entire asset class.
They're validating the policy. Energy strategy outlives tax strategy. That's the core maxim. Tax credits expire. Administrations change. But once that steel is in the ground, it needs to work for 30 years. That is the only way the economics actually makes sense for society as a whole.
Okay, but let's play devil's advocate again. If you're a developer listening to this, you might say, look, I'd love to build the Rolls-Royce of solar plants. I'd love to use the most durable components and over budget for O&M. But if I do that, my project costs 20% more, and I lose the bid to the guy who value engineered it to the bone.
And that is the reality of the market. It's a race to the bottom on LCOE, the levelized cost of energy.
So is Lewis just yelling at clouds here? Is this just a plea for quality in a market that only rewards cheapness?
I don't think so. I think Lewis is identifying a market correction that's happening right now. The race to the bottom works when you can flip the asset and run. But the buyers, the long-term asset holders, the pension funds, the utilities, they're getting smarter.
They've been burned.
They've been burned by those cheap projects. They've seen the losing asset firsthand. So now you're seeing diligence tighten up. You're seeing investors asking much harder questions about the O&M plan before they sign the check. The market is slowly, painfully realizing that a low CapEx often means a disastrous OpEx.
So the deal is finally starting to price in the base.
Slowly. Painfully. But yes, because at the end of the day, you can't financial engineer your way out of physics. Eventually, the sun has to hit the silicon and the electrons have to move.
I want to circle back to that market contraction insight. The executive tells Lewis, you're in the best spot. Does that apply beyond just solar? Feels like a broader lesson for anyone working in tech or, well, any kind of infrastructure.
Oh, absolutely. It's the classic cycle of innovation. You have the gold rush phase innovation, deployment, messy growth, and then you have the consolidation phase operation, efficiency, profit extraction. We are seeing this in software, in SaaS, and definitely in energy.
The builders become the operators.
And the operators become the strategists. If you know how the machine breaks, you are the best person to design the next version of the machine. That's why Lewis's perspective is so valuable. It's feedback from the field that should be informing the next generation of development.
If the developers would listen.
If they would listen. But usually, they're too busy trying to close the tax equity before the end of the quarter.
Touché. Okay, let's wrap this up by synthesizing the mission we started with. We wanted to unpack this pyramid of performance. And we found that the industry is kind of inverted top-heavy with policy and finance, but dangerously light on the foundational operations.
And we identify the disconnect, that timing gap between the financial reward, which is immediate, and the energy reality, which takes decades.
And we looked at the career pivot, why the unglamorous work of O&M might actually be the smartest strategic play in a tightening market.
Real roofs, real equipment, real conditions. It all comes down to respecting the physical reality of the asset.
So for all of you listening, whether you're structuring deals, pouring concrete, or managing a portfolio, the question is, are you building a tax strategy or are you building an energy strategy?
And if you think you're building an energy strategy, look at your O&M budget. That'll tell you the truth.
Ouch. That's a tough metric.
Truth usually is.
Before we go, I do have a final thought to leave you with, something that's been nagging me through this whole discussion. We've talked about how the failure travels upward.
Right.
But what happens if we don't fix this disconnect? If we continue to incentivize the build over the operation?
We end up with a grid full of zombie assets.
Exactly. And here's the provocation. If the tax benefit is captured in year one, but the energy value is needed in year 20, are we looking at a future where we have technically deployed massive amounts of clean energy, but in reality, we're sitting in the dark because we didn't value the maintenance?
That is the risk.
Yeah.
We could hit our capacity targets on paper, but completely miss our generation targets in reality. And the climate doesn't care about capacity, it cares about generation.
A sobering thought to end on. Go check your foundations, everyone. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope you found this podcast useful. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to reach out to us at info@alternativesolutions.az. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to tune in for future episodes.